Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. A little bit different today from my usual sort of style. I've got Debbie Kind. I knew I'd say that, Debbie. It's such a simple word. Sorry, Debbie Kindness with me today. And I met Debbie a couple of years ago, end of 2016, when I went and traveled to India, and I found what Debbie does and how she lives in different places around the world really fascinating. So I thought this would make a very interesting conversation. So Debbie's love of travel was sparked at the age of 11 on a family trip to Europe. But visiting Asia didn't happen until she was 27, and she fell in love with the craziness of the diverse country that India is. After many months backpacking around the subcontinent, she landed a job working for an Australian tour company leading tours in India, Nepal, and Southeast Asia and Europe. So after 6 years of doing that, in 2006, Debbie left to start her own company and focusing mainly on India, and has not looked back since. They operate between 8 to 10 different tours each year. So welcome, Debbie. Apologies about the surname. I know we just discussed it. It's such a tricky name, Kindness. It's a lovely name too.
Thanks, Janine, and thank you very much for inviting me on your show today.
Yeah, you are most welcome. I've been traveling a lot in the last 20 years as well, but India was one of those countries where it just surprised me as to, color is probably the first word that people use, and color and food and just the people and how interesting the place was. But you've been living there for a while, but sort of there's a lot that led up to that, I can imagine. So just tell me a little bit more about you and what you do, why you do it, and how you got to India, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'd always loved traveling, and I did the usual Aussie thing, went over to the UK and backpacked around Europe, lived in London, worked in London for a few years. But I was, as I think you said, about 27 when I first stepped foot in Asia, and the first place I did step foot was in Delhi in India, which was certainly a shock to the system. But very quickly, I fell madly in love with it. And I just wanted to be there. I just wanted to experience it all. So I spent the next several years backpacking as often as I could. I'd come back to Australia and work 2 jobs, 3 jobs just to save the money to go back and travel around India. And I had a few friends who would start to contact me for advice for their trips that they were planning to India. And I thought, I could maybe make a living out of this. Didn't know the first thing about running tours. I didn't have any idea how I could go about doing that. So I thought there must be someone else out there already doing this. So I did some research, and I found that there was a couple of different travel companies, tour companies that were doing the sort of thing I'd be interested in. And so I was fortunate enough to score a job, and I loved it. I was totally in my element, absolutely adored living out of a backpack, being on the road all the time, and showing people around these amazing parts of the world. So predominantly in India, but I got to travel other places as well, which was an added bonus. I actually gave it all up in 2005, thinking, no, I've got to go back to a real life and get a real job. And I came back to Australia, and I did that. But within a year, I was back over in India with my first 2 groups, family and friends of friends. And having the experience that I'd gathered over the previous 5-6 years, I was able to easily put together a tour. And so I had 2 tours, 25 clients, and that was the start of Incredible Indian Tours.
And that's, yeah, just that whole living out of a backpack. I mean, you said you just love living out of a backpack. So some people do and just continue traveling and that. What is it about living out of a backpack that made, you know, that you enjoyed so much? Because I know by the end of a few weeks holiday out of a suitcase, I'm sort of going, right, I'm done. Let's get to it. I get tired of wearing the same things all the time, but yeah.
The backpack does need to stretch a lot for all the new clothes,
especially in India.
Especially in India, absolutely. Look, I guess I'm just a gypsy, and I love being on the road. I love experiencing new things. I love going new places. And that's how it started. But I think with India, I made so many really good friends over the years that it became not so much about exploring new places. It was about taking people back to visit my friends and get to know my friends and get to know these places that had become so familiar to me, that I knew were incredible places to have just really different experiences that you're not going to get in any other country. You know, where you have those wow moments and you get that, oh my God, India really is totally not what I expected, but it's better and it's just incredible, as they say. So I guess just having the ability to do that, to be able to take people to have these experiences in a short period of time, not having to backpack for months on end like I did. I don't want to live out of a backpack.
It does change your perspective, doesn't it, as we mature? Look, and that's
occasionally, a few times a year is perfect.
Mm. Yeah, I can't be convinced of that. But anyway, well, what I loved about the tour that I did, I know you do a range of tours, and this was a women's only tour that we did. But what I loved is it seemed like it was not just a highlights reel, but your personal highlights reel. It just felt, the places were, there was a couple of different sort of places, but they felt like beautiful places where you could wander and get to know individuals and not just be, you know, on a tour where you're having to rush from one thing to the next. There was so much opportunity just to immerse yourself into the country as well. And I think that's what you need to do with India, isn't it? Just take time.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It is such a challenging country to visit. It is like nowhere else. It is very much in your face. It's intense. So most of the tours do still do the whistle stop, one night here, one night there, whiz through, see the sights, but you can't experience India really like that. So I've very much taken my perspective of all the years that I backpacked and travelled on my own through India. I learned how long you need in a place to get a feel for it, to be able to get out on your own, walk around, meet the local people. And I met those local people and I made, as I said before, so many wonderful friends. So I've really tried to incorporate that into my tours so that the interaction is very much both ways. It's not just about us as foreigners coming and seeing the sights. It's about meeting the local people and having those interactions, because that's what makes India so special.
And there's places that we went where there wasn't millions of people as well, which was a bit of
A surprise.
There were. It was crowded everywhere. So it was really nice just to go to places where it was just quiet. Or even the places we stayed, because they were they were little boutique places. It wasn't the sort of normal noise and that of hotels.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to think of
hotels.
That my preference in traveling. I prefer to have something a little boutique-y where it feels a bit more family orientated.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to remember what's the city with the fort? Is that Jaisalmer?
Which fort?
I know. There's one. I'm trying to think. But it's one of the J's, okay? I know it's not Jaipur. So
there's Jodhpur and there's Jaisalmer.
I think it was Jaisalmer.
The big fort was Jodhpur, probably, that you're thinking of.
No, I'm thinking of it was more walk up the street to the small fort.
That's Jaisalmer,
It is great. But what I loved is because I just fell in love with the chai tea. I've tried to replicate it here and cannot do it. But this gentleman that had a little shop outside where we were staying, and he would put it in a thermos for me so I could take it back to the group and we could all have our chai tea. And he just, the first day, he just trusted me with his thermos and went to share it. And it was just, we chatted each day while we were there and it was just such a lovely experience. So it's a real fond memory of that city, just that, oh, no, so simple, isn't it? There's so those simple things that you just can experience without having to do the tourist thing.
Everyone has their own unique little experience like that in different locations. And that's why I allow the free time. I get you to these amazing places. You know, we'll do an orientation walk around. I'll make sure that you see the main sites. But I want our clients, our travelers to go out and have these experiences, because that's what traveling in India is really about.
Yeah, no, totally agree. But you haven't just been traveling in India, you've been living in India as well. So tell me about that experience.
Look, Janine, it has been really interesting. Not at all what I expected. I'd been based in India back from 1999 through to 2005, but I was basically living out of hotels the entire time. When I moved back in 2014, I actually shifted there. I rented a house and, blank shell. I had to buy everything. I had to set it up from scratch. And I chose a beautiful city called Udaipur, which it's quite a small city as far as Indian cities go. There's only a handful of other foreigners that actually live there. A lot of tourists go through, so you see a lot of Westerners, but the infrastructure for an expat is pretty basic. There's not really much there. So I really struggled finding ways to set up house, to talk to my neighbors, my landlords, because they don't speak the Hindi that I know a little of. Their accent is very strong, and more often than not, they're speaking in the local language, Marwari. So it was a real struggle. But I got there and I got very familiar with how things worked in Udaipur and, got my way around. What I think was something that was never expected, I actually moved there with my partner, Mike, who is a South African. And for me as a woman in India, I'm able to interact with all the men and all the women in India. Now, Udaipur is in the state of Rajasthan, which is very traditional. And Indian women generally, especially, they don't talk to men that are not part of their family group. So any strange man is sort of basically a person, not in their frame of reference. So firstly, they've got nothing to talk to them about.
Right.
And secondly, they're either too shy or they don't want to, or they're not allowed to speak to a man that's not one of their family members. So after some time, Mike started he was really excluded from interacting with half of the population.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah, very interesting situation.
Yeah, it is interesting. It would have been very difficult as well for him. Because you've been there a long time too, haven't you?
Mm-hmm, yeah. So we actually made the decision to shift. We've still got our house in Udaipur and we still spend a fair bit of time there. We love it when we go back. But we've also now got, and because Asia is so cheap, we're fortunate that we're able to actually have homes in two countries now. So we also have a home in Thailand. And we spend quite a lot of time there as well. It's great because it's a four-hour flight back over to Delhi or to Jaipur, which is near to Udaipur. And we get the best of both worlds. We get to spend time in Udaipur, which we love. We get to spend time in Thailand that has the beaches and an amazing food and more of an expat lifestyle. So that's where we're at now.
Yeah, and you're in Australia at the moment as we're speaking.
I'm in Australia at the moment, yeah. I've got to come back every year because the Indian government won't give me a business visa unless I apply in Australia.
Right.
So it's a good excuse to come back to visit family and friends, so that's not a problem.
No, that's great. It's look, Udaipur was probably one of my favourite locations. It was just such a beautiful city. And for those listening, they'll recognize the lakes. And out of the, was it the first movie or the second Exotic Marigold
the
Hotel?
The first movie, yeah.
When they went to the funeral, didn't they? And they were in the hotel and looked out over and had their gin and tonic on the rooftop and looked out over all the lakes. And
the
we did.
Gin and tonic thing. Mm-hmm.
Yep, we did that exactly replayed that scene when we stayed at that hotel as well. It was just brilliant. We loved that, and the views and the lakes and the castles is just outstanding. I can understand why just to be in a city that's so pretty and it's got so many different experiences. Yeah, I can understand the joy of living there. I do remember when we first spoke quite a while ago, you mentioned a story about not being able to pay your cleaner as much as you wanted to pay her because of the local standard.
Absolutely. We had a cleaner that our landlord had sourced for us. And she was quite wily. She was very clever. And as time went on, we got her doing more work. She kept asking for more money and we'd been paying her something ridiculous, like $30 a week, a month.
Right.
Equivalent for her to come every day and clean the house. She'd be there an hour maybe, but, you know, that's 30 odd hours a week. So to pay her $1 an hour, we thought was a little bit unfair. And she certainly asked for more money if we gave her more work. And we tried to bargain her down, but we were not at all unhappy about paying her a little extra. But that became a problem because she unfortunately was telling all the other cleaners and maids in the street that she was now earning this much money. And we got into trouble. To the point where our landlord actually ended up sacking her, getting rid of her, so they could employ a new cleaner for us that would be paid at the base rate again. We didn't want it. We were happy to give her more, but it was affecting all the other people in our street. How bizarre.
That is bizarre, isn't it? So, yeah. And that, look, that's one of the things, isn't it? And that's probably one of the issues with India is that, and would you go as far as calling it suppression of women, or is it, it's a bit strong word that is, isn't it?
But I would say suppression is definitely a bit strong. But certainly in places like Rajasthan, and there are some other areas of India that still are, you could say backward in certain societal norms. They are very traditional, and women aren't as free as maybe they are in other parts of the country. When I say they're not as free, what I mean by that is they still will get married, they'll stay home, they won't go out to work. That will be their life. They may have been educated and been working before marriage, but once they are married, that's it. They're in the home, they stay there. Whereas in other parts of India, you now start to see more women, married women, older women going out into the workforce. Rajasthan is still very traditional. And it's not that the women are suppressed, it's just that's what they have always done. And the level of education is in Rajasthan is still certainly less compared to many other parts of the country. So the women may not really know that they have the option. Mm-hmm. They're not educated. They don't know that, well, after marriage, after babies, they probably can go back out and work and do things because no one else around them does it. Their family has never done it.
Mm. And so, do they live in their family groups as well, so that there's many generations mm-hmm. within the household too?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mm. At least three or four generations in each household usually. Mm. When the woman is married, she will move into her new husband's family home.
Right, okay.
So she'll be there with her sister-in-laws, her in-laws, mm-hmm. maybe their parents, and then, of course, the new babies will come along. So, yeah, still very traditional.
And, look, you know, the Western society is only, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I was reading some articles recently, just in the 1940s, when the men came back from the war, then women in Western societies went back into the home roles. They mm-hmm. had the experience of working out during the war, but they were then, and it wasn't just to give them the men's jobs. That was just their role. They had to step up then, but they just expected that they would just not have jobs outside the home. So it's only, you know, 70 years ago that. So it's...
Well, that's very true, yeah.
Mm, so that's... Yeah. I was just been doing a fair bit of reading about different standards for different women in cultures and finding out there's a couple of good cultures around the world, one in particular in Indonesia, where the women are the matriarchs and they mm-hmm. make the decisions as to who someone's allowed to marry. But then if the women change their mind, they bring up all the children themselves and the men really don't have much mm-hmm. to do with it, and the women control everything. So it was really interesting, actually. There's some great societies around that are different, but it's just what historically is what they've done, so that's accepted as what they do.
That's exactly right. It's accepted, it's normal, and they accept it. Our landlord has two sons. They didn't have any daughters of their own. Both the sons are now married, and we've been there to see the second wedding. We were invited to both of those families now. Both of those couples have daughters each. Mm. But we've seen the younger son, his wife, beautiful young girl, well-educated, speaks good English. She's moved into the family home now, had the little girl, but she almost never, ever leaves the house. She's there. She's the youngest woman in the house now, so she does all the cooking and the basic cleaning that their maid doesn't do. And she's totally accepted that because she grew up knowing that that would be her role.
Mm. Yeah, it's... Yeah, and I suppose then there's no complaint because that's just what you do. Mm. Is the caste system, you know, alive and well in Rajasthan? Is that
very
obvious?
Much so? Very, very much so. Yeah.
And do you want to just explain that? Just for people listening who may not understand exactly what we're talking about.
India has a caste system which only really became entrenched several hundred years ago. It was never part of early Hinduism. And again, it is with the Hindus, not other religious groups in India, but the Hindus are the majority, making about 80% of the population. And there are four main levels of the caste system, the priestly caste, the priests and teachers, then there's the rulers, the old kings would have come from that caste level. Then you had the merchants, and then you had the workers. And still in Rajasthan, that caste system is deeply entrenched. Basically, people will not marry outside of their caste, and not just the caste, but the subcaste. So one, the main caste, say the workers' caste, they will have perhaps hundreds of subcastes.
Okay.
So depending on what job they do, if they are a builder or they are
a farmer,
exactly. They are all broken down into different subcastes. So, and you don't marry outside of your subcaste.
Right.
It's just the way it is. Yeah. Going back to my landlord, I've learned so much about India living in a family home, which has been amazing. You know, I thought I knew a fair bit before, but it's opened my eyes in so many ways to a whole lot of different aspects of life there. The young lad who got married a year and a half ago, he had a girlfriend who was from a lower caste. Now, his parents, my landlords, were quite happy for the match. They'd met her. She was around at the house all the time. They loved her. They thought she'd be a really good wife for their son, and they were very happy to accept her into the family as they put themselves out there as being modern Indians, and they caste was not going to be an issue in their family. Mm-hmm. However, the girl's father, so keep in mind that she's from a lower caste, and you would think that marrying up to a higher caste would be acceptable, would be preferable, but her father was adamantly against the match.
Right. Isn't that bizarre?
Really strange. So in the end, they did not get married, and they had to find another bride for their son, who was also in the same caste. Yeah. So that I found very surprising.
That is. And I thought that I've had all the time since understanding a little bit of it, you know, from being there and doing some reading on it as well, is that how can they change? How can they, you know, move into a different, I suppose it's not just financial, because some of the lower castes can be quite wealthy.
They can, absolutely.
You sort of expect that lower means less poorer income, which is probably true, but there would have to be opportunities with merchants particularly or something like that.
There definitely are. And, in fact, one of India's past presidents was from the lower than low caste, the untouchables. So there are opportunities for them to break out of that caste system. And some, the bigger cities, some areas are less caste focused than others. You know, India is such an enormous and diverse country. You know, I'll be talking about one aspect of society in India that will be very true for one part of the country, but it will be totally the opposite in another part of the country. Mm. So generalizations are great, but they're not always specific to the country as a whole. But generally, I think the only way for India really to move forward, my opinion, is education of women. Once education for women, they across the country, they're all educated through to higher secondary, then things will start to change. And they are changing in those areas where the education is better in general.
I was going to say, so how does that happen? It's you know, on a lot of the TV programs, you do notice a lot of the women that have, you know, a higher education. But so it's obviously happening, but as you said, probably in certain areas more so than others.
Very definitely. And, you know, I mean, there are some brilliant women coming out of India, and there always have been. I mean, Indira Gandhi was one of the first female prime ministers anywhere in the world. So there have always been women in power, women in areas where they are looked up to. And, in fact, if you want to bring in the religious aspect of this, as you may know, India has a lot of gods. Hinduism has a lot of gods.
Yes.
There are 330 million of them.
Right. I didn't know there were that many. I knew there was a few, but I didn't know there were that many.
ultimately they're all manifestations of the one God, but there are feminine and masculine forms of that as well. And the most important God for every Hindu is the mother goddess, the feminine aspect. So they put the mother goddess above everything else. So that's this really bizarre contradiction that religiously the mother goddess is the most important thing in their lives, religiously, spiritually. And there are many women who have been leaders of business and high court judges back in 70 years ago that would not have probably happened in other parts of the world.
But I guess it's interesting.
It's interesting. But I think it's because it's such a big country, such a diverse country. Literally, it's a lot of different countries in one. You know, you can't just say it's all one, one nation. Before the British came and brought it together, the English, it was a lot of different countries with different rulers, different languages, different cuisines. So it is very varied. And where there are a lot of poor people, that's where you get the education standards are less and you do have inequality there, greater inequality. So it's hard to speak about women in India as a generalization on any level because it just varies so much from one part to the next.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's something I've had as a goal or an intention of mine for quite a lot of years is to go and speak in India and speak to Indian women about confidence and their belief in themselves and, you know, just how they can speak up for themselves in whether it's in a job position or in something that's going to create a different life. And it's just been something that's sort of been bubbling away in the back of my mind. And particularly since going there, I'm thinking I just love to go back and do exactly that. I think it's something that's definitely going to happen because it's been there for a while now. So,
right. Yeah. Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, and there's definitely a place for that.
Yes.
There are so many women out there who are doing wonderful things and who need ideas and support to take them forward, for sure.
Yeah, permission within themselves is often the first step to be able to do that. Just thinking about the caste system, an incident that happened. Where were we? Oh, we were in Agra and there was a Bucks party going on. It was also Diwali, so it was loud. It was just loud and colourful. But there was a Bucks party going on downstairs and they just kept going later and later and louder without really any need for it. They weren't dancing to the music. They just kept turning it up. But the hotel staff weren't game enough to tell these men not to make the noise, and they were. Now I've always wondered how anyone could identify someone from the same caste, different caste, and you know, without knowing their family. But I could tell, I really could, for the arrogance of these guys that they expected and were able to have do whatever they liked at any particular time, and the staff weren't game enough to tell them to shut it down.
Yeah. There totally is that aspect of life there. People come from so many different levels of society and that's that caste system. Mm. It's entrenched. And if someone from a higher caste, you know, in some area, some ways the caste system is almost linear, but in a lot of ways it is still very much stacked, the lower to higher. And as foreigners, we have bucklies of figuring out what caste somebody would come from. But the locals know. They know by their dress. They know by their names. The surnames are caste based.
Right. So, okay. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that is interesting. But now you don't do all the tours yourself, do you, now, Debbie?
No. I have the wonderful Kim.
We had the wonderful Kim on it for us as well.
Kim tends to do most of the tours in Rajasthan and North India and the women only tours. That's one of her favourite parts of the country. Not that it's not mine, but she doesn't like the heat, so she doesn't like to go down to the south or to Sri Lanka and places like that.
So what's her history?
Her history, Kim.
I found her fascinating.
She is. She is. Kim is a trained acupuncturist, massage therapist, amongst other things. Yeah. And she first travelled to India before I ever did, probably back in the mid-late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't come back for many years. And she eventually did. And found her way up into the mountains, into the Himalayas, and got to a place, a town called Manali, and thought, oh, my God, I'm home. This is it.
Wow.
And she's stayed there, and she's basically been there for probably about the last 12 years now.
Wow. She's a Sydney girl too, so that's really quite a long way away, isn't it?
Yeah. So she is still permanently based up in the Himalayas,
mm-hmm.
and lives in an amazing location, just surrounded by snow-capped peaks and river valley. It's really gorgeous.
I remember her telling me stories about, you know, the snow and obviously it's when it's winter up there, it's winter.
Yeah.
And just things freezing and not having facilities and having to go outside when it was necessary and different things as well. It's quite a different experience than we have here in our Western world.
It's a very different world. She has to rely on a wood fire or coal. She has no hot water. She doesn't have a hot water geyser. She has to boil her hot water. She hasn't got a washing machine. She does all her laundry by hand, but by choice. Really?
Yeah.
I look at her and go, what? How do you do that? How do you wash your sheets and your towels by hand?
Especially in winter, you know, where do you go?
Out in the snow, slopping it around? No, not my idea. I like the warmer climes, so hence why she's
the other thing
when I'm in Rajasthan.
The other thing when she said, you know, come and visit and do one of the tours up there, it's driving around those mountain roads. That's not my favourite thing. So I know there's quite a few hours and a bus needed to get to where she is. So
she has a long trip up from Delhi. I think it's about a 14-hour bus trip.
Yeah, that's quite amazing. It's just, and that's, you know, what I find really fascinating with people is everyone's got different stories, and there's so many people not necessarily living, you know, what we have in inverted commas calling traditional lifestyles. There's people living all around the world, and you would have found it. Maybe not as many expats in Udaipur, but probably where you are in Thailand now, there'd be a lot more expats there. I know quite a lot of people that are living in Thailand.
There are an enormous number. I've tried to figure out to put a number to it, and I don't think I'd be exaggerating if I said there was 100,000 living in Pattaya alone. And probably over 1 million in Bangkok.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a lot. That is a lot of expats. And they're from all around the world, not just
all
Australians, obviously.
Oh, of course. Yeah, all around the world. I mean, you've got every nationality you could imagine is living in Thailand.
And that's a completely different country, different feel, different, you know, it's still busy with lots of people, but it's more – I was going to say more Asian. How can you be more Asian but less subcontinent? You know what I mean, though, don't you?
Yeah, more Oriental.
More Oriental. That's what
India
I was looking for.
India is its own sort of thing. It's to me, India is not Asia at all. To me, the Southeast Asia, that's Asia. India's got that influence from the Middle East, and it's really standalone.
Yeah.
So yeah, Thailand is a very, very different country, and it's, you know, I guess things work better in Thailand. It seems it's more clean and neat and tidy. It's a better lifestyle, I have to admit. You know, we can buy everything that we would want, great homewares and furnishings, foodstuffs from all around the world, sort of things that we completely unable to purchase in India.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of variety there. I know when I travelled there in 2015, I think it was, I was actually went over to help at an animal refuge. And from where you said you were located, I don't think I was very far from there as well. Mm-hmm. It was only a couple of hours south of Bangkok.
Yeah.
And even if not that far, there was a beach place near us, but we worked on this animal rescue. Mm-hmm. And it was just the people there were just so gentle and kind, and there's so many wonderful countries to experience, and each one has their own story to tell in their own field.
Absolutely, totally. They do. It is a very different place to India. So it's a good contrast, I'm finding, for me to get away from India and come back with a fresh perspective. Even though I've been doing that for 26 years now, it is good for me to get out of the country, come back refreshed, enjoy it again. Not that I don't enjoy it, but it's good to have that contrast for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's but again, travel is just, you know, one of those things that I think everyone should have the opportunity to experience, and it just opens you up, changes your perspective on things too, doesn't it, Debbie? You have less demands, do you think, as well?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It. Well, I always say travel is the greatest teacher in life, and it is. It's the best university of life. You learn so much traveling the world that you would never learn anywhere else. You learn about different people. You learn about yourself predominantly and the way you react to different situations that you'd never experience if you just stayed at home.
Yes, and you become more patient and you become more patient. That's probably a good one because things just happen as well. We've got a really long holiday planned for 10 weeks in Europe coming up from June. Mm. So that will, you know, be the longest that we've been out of the country in one go, and traveling. It'll be quite different. Very different than Asia. But lots of fun experiences and lots of driving and lots of just taking time as well. And that's what I think I like about travel, when you've got an opportunity to take time and not rushed and just really get a feel for the places instead of those usual tours where they're, as you said, you know, a whistle stop and jump in, jump out, take some photos and get going again, or you've got to have everything packed up, ready to go at 7 o'clock each morning. And I've only done that once, and that was once for the experience. So I can't compare.
Yeah.
So tell me about your tours. You know, just tell us all about the different types of tours, because I had the ladies only, which was one experience, and we did lots of girly things that we just love to do.
Of course,
a few of us did a cooking class and got some clothes made, and again had the time to wander and shop. You know, there were some of us, and I'm not included. Well, actually, I am. I sent mine back too. That we sent things back that we couldn't carry.
Too
much stuff, but. It was a lovely,
pretty much the norm.
Feminine experience. But they're not all like that, though, are they?
Not all the tours. No, we just have that one women only itinerary, and we absolutely do more fun things that women will be more focused on, the shopping, the, you know, getting your henna on your hands and having...
That was fun. That was not
days treatment.
And dressing up in the sari, that sari night with the entertainers and the henna, that was just such a highlight. It was just...
Absolutely. Yeah. But look, I, apart from those small things, I don't think that the tours differ greatly, whether they're a women only or they're a mixed group. We still do all the really fun stuff. And surprisingly, a lot of guys also like to shop.
Mm-hmm. I agree. There's so much to look at.
There is. And there's so many different experiences that that work for both a mixed group or a women-only group. So the tours don't differ that much in their concept.
Mm-hmm.
All the other tours that I do, most of our tours are in India, and we cover most different parts of the country now. But we've also got a couple of trips in Nepal. We've got a trip in Sri Lanka, one in Bhutan, and one in, it's not actually the Indian subcontinent, but it's near enough, is Burma or Myanmar. So just touching base on all of these different nations in that region, because I think they're all amazing and they all have so much to offer experiences. But the India tours vary from our shortest one is 11 days. Our longest one is 24 days.
Okay.
They all follow the same sort of format. They're cultural immersion tours. So we make sure you don't miss out on seeing the really important sites, but we give you cultural opportunities as well and free time for you to get out and explore your own and have your own Indian experiences. That's what I like to say, that I create a place for our travellers to find their India.
Mm, yes, and that's exactly how I felt. Oh, mm-hmm. I didn't know you went to Bhutan.
Yeah.
Mm. It's on the list. There's a very long list. I think most travellers have a very long list as well. Now, just finishing up, some points that you just want people to remember about either your tours or about India or women's culture in India, anything particular that you think is really important for people to be aware of?
Well, I guess India is like nowhere else, and unfortunately it gets quite a bad rap in foreign press a lot of the time. People I speak to, in Australia, in the States as well, other Western countries, will say, India, oh, why would you want to go there? I can't imagine wanting to travel somewhere like that. They have this perception that it's all poor, the poverty is everywhere, it's super, super crowded, it's smelly. It's not. It is all those things, but it's also the absolute opposite of all those things. It's the sort of country that is certainly not for everyone, but so many people come away, everyone comes away surprised, shocked even. It's nothing like they imagined.
No. That's a really good point. That one of the friends that travelled with me, I'd said I'm going to India, and we travel a lot together. And she said, oh, I don't want to go to India. It's not definitely not my list. So I sent her your itinerary, and she said, I'm coming. She just went, I'm coming. Don't go without me.
Yeah, it is just a very unexpected country on so many levels.
Oh, I just have to interrupt there. Sorry, something else has just popped in my mind. It's funny how I'm reliving this tour in my head now. Talk about unexpected country. We're in the driving along a highway. It'd been a day of a fair bit of travelling, and we had to do a little pit stop, and so our driver's pulled off, and we've crossed this dual highway with nobody. There's no cars. There's no people. We haven't seen anyone. An odd cow down the middle of the road, but nothing else for hours. So we've gone we've walked across, found a little hill and walked back again. As we're walking back, there's these young boys came out selling fruit. They were nowhere. Nowhere. The bus has stopped, so they're selling fruit. It was hilarious. And that's that unexpectedness of it's just a great story to have as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That is exactly the sort of thing that happens every day.
Yeah.
When you travel through a country like India.
Yeah, that's
so. I guess the other thing that I'd like to, just really mention about the company, the business, is I think most companies that run tours, most organizations that run tours in countries like India are larger organizations. They're more male focused. Having a women's perspective for me, organizing the tours, planning the itineraries, planning where to stay, it does, I think, offer a totally different type of tour. And, we're not the only women-only tour operator out there now. There's a few of them. Mm-hmm. But I think it will give our travellers a totally different experience, because we have the ability to get in with local women that a larger organisation wouldn't, a larger company wouldn't, because we're so very much a small boutique tour operator. And we're going to, we want to keep it that way. So as well, we're access to, to lives, to people's private lives, more than if you were in India with a foreign tour leader. I mean, sorry, with an Indian tour leader, or even a foreign male tour leader. So I think that really adds something special.
Yes. Yeah, it certainly does. And you only have a maximum of 10 participants on each of the tours anyway, don't you?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So, no, that's great. How can people find you?
Okay.
And go look it up, because once you look it up, these tours, you're going to go, oh, my gosh, that's what I want to do.
Well, our website is, the name of the business, the company, is Incredible Indian Tours. But the website is www.incredibleindiatours.com.
Right, okay, Incredible India Tours.
Yeah, without the N.
Okay. And people can email you. How can they get that, Debbie?
And Debbie, DEBBIE, at incredibleindiatours.com.
Fantastic. That's great. Look, anything else you want to add just before we wrap up?
I think we've probably covered it all. I'm sure there'll be a lot more I'll think of as soon as we finish the call. But but I think it's been great chatting.
It has been. And I think that between the two of us, we've definitely highlighted the benefits of travelling to India and doing it in that small way that we did. But just not even just to have to travel there, just to be aware of, the country itself and the beauty and the colour and the food and everything, as I said right at the introduction. It's an amazing place.
And the aromas, the sights. I don't think people realise how many varied sites and landscapes there are throughout the country as well.
Yes, incredible deserts and mountains and just, we drove for hours and there's wind farms for hours. That just amazed me. That was quite incredible. Look, it's been wonderful, and thank you for sharing. I thought that would be something a little bit different, interesting, and it just opens people's ideas up to a different place, and the beauty of India too. It's one of the lesser expensive places to travel to.
Absolutely.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the accommodation that you get to stay at too is something we didn't touch on. It is wonderful heritage hotels. They were once castles and palaces and fortresses.
When we'd go into our room when we arrived at each place, we would, that was the thing, we'd rush into our room and there'd be amazing beds with beautiful canopies and all this gorgeous stuff on the walls and floor. And it felt like we were walking into our own palace bedroom each time. It was absolutely. It was a wonderful experience. We were, it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Look, thank you for that, Debbie. So that's Debbie Kindness from Incredible India Tours is what the website is,
yes,
as well, .com. Right, excellent. So thank you very much for sharing. It's been a lovely chat.
Thank you so much, Janine. It's been great catching up again.
It certainly has. Yeah. It brought back my memories of my holiday. So it was great. It was wonderful. Always love that. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. And I hope you enjoyed our little trip around India today. Remember to, if you're wanting to chat to me, you can book in for a free clarity session and go to my website, JanineVosper.com. And that's spelled JaneVosper.com. And it's free, 20 minutes, and we can have a chat about any issues that you might be having in your business. Remember, if you've enjoyed this episode, to please leave a 5-star rating. It's really appreciated when you do. And I look forward to you joining us on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. Have a great fortnight and bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.